following is a presentation of Refuge Calvary Chapel Huntington Beach with Pastor Bill Welsh. For more information about our ministry, please visit refugefamily.com.
I think most of you know that we are going through the Gospel of Mark, and we're still in chapter 1. We're not racing through. We're taking our time to do this, and so I'm going to read to you the passage that Pastor Bill's going to be sharing on today. It's from the Gospel of Mark, of course, chapter 1. If you'd like to follow along, I'm going to read verse 40 through 46, Mark chapter 1, 40 through 46. Now, a leper came to him, to Jesus, imploring him, kneeling down to him and saying to him, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." And then Jesus, moved with compassion, love that. Jesus, moved with compassion, he stretched out his hand and he touched him and he said to him, "I am willing, be cleansed." And as soon as he had spoken, immediately the leprosy left him and he was cleansed. And he strictly warned him and he sent him away at once. And he said to him, "See that you say nothing to anyone, but go your way, show yourself to the priest, and offer for your cleansing those things which Moses commanded as a testimony to them." However, he went out and he began to proclaim it freely and to spread the matter so that Jesus could no longer openly enter the city, but was outside in the deserted places, and they came to him from every direction. So reading an account like that, a story like that, I wonder if you ever wonder, what's the backstory? What's the story behind the story? Because there's a lot there, and it's the kind of story that, man, I wonder what was going on. I mean, first of all, how did this guy ever contract this evil, dreaded disease? How did he get it, the disease of leprosy, right? And what did he lose that day? What happened on the day of the diagnosis when it became official, you've got leprosy? And then his family, how did they react? I mean, what do you tell them? How do you tell them? What did that look like? And then finally, I wonder, maybe you do as well, how did the guy even survive an ordeal like that? A dreaded disease, this incurable disease, and be told, you've got that. So this morning, we get to take some time to ponder that. Let's do that.
The earth is the Lord's, and the fullness thereof, and the world and everyone who lives in it, because he established it upon the waters and he built it upon the seas. But the question is, who will climb the mountain of the Lord and who will stand in his holy place? Only those who have clean hands and a pure heart. Only they will stand in the mountain of the Lord. Clean hands. Those with clean hands and pure hearts get to draw near to God in his house and upon his mountain. Clean hands. And I still can't believe it. I can't believe it's gone. After all of these years, half of my life, it's gone and I'm clean again. Pardon my manners. I should have introduced myself to you. But first, let me say to you, Boker Tov. Say that to one another. Turn to someone, look them in the eye, say, Boker Tov. You just said, you owe me 50 shekels. No, you said good morning to your neighbors there. Now turn to them and say, Shalom, Shalom. It's double peace, but it means this. More than anything else, it means all is well. And I must say to you today, all is well in my heart and in my life by the mercy and the grace of God, but all was not always well in my life. I must admit to you, there were days when I wondered what had become of me. You see, I was once a leper. Don't run for the door. Don't run for the door. I said I was a leper. I am no longer a leper. Look at me. I'm clean. No, I know, I'm not much to look at, but I'm clean. My hands are clean, and my body has been clean and healed from this leprosy. Can you believe that? If you know anything about leprosy, it's hard to believe, but let me tell you my story. I come from a village just to the east of Jerusalem. Maybe some of you have been there. It's the town of Bethany. And it's perched right at the top of the Mount of Olives. As you go out the west gate of the temple and you climb that steep hill, you will arrive first of all at the town, the little village of Bethany. That's where I was born. That's where I was raised. And today I get to say, yes, that's where I live again. But my name is Moshe. Say that. Moshe. What is that short for? Well, it's not really shorter. It's just another form of the name Moses. Moses. Yes, I was named after one of the great deliverers of Israel, really the greatest deliverer. He led us out of all those hundreds of years of exile and bondage in Egypt. Moses. Now, I guess my parents had high hopes for me and what I would become, and I'm sorry to say that I sadly disappointed them. I probably never became what they would hope that I would have been, but I started well. I was a good boy. And just like all of you here, good boys and girls, right? You never disobeyed your parents, right? No, we all have. But I was a good boy, and I learned my lessons from my disobedience. And I was good in school, too. When we went away as little boys to learn Hebrew and then to learn the Torah, I did well in Torah class. I did well in Hebrew class. And God blessed me with the ability to learn. And oh, I married very, very well. How many of you would say you married very well? Gentlemen, your hand should be in the air if you're seated by your wife right now. I married very well. Her name is Esther. Yes, another name of one of our great deliverers in Israel. And she became my wife, and God has blessed us. We work very hard. We work hard as a couple. My business is, I guess you could say I'm a bit of a carpenter, but I'm more into crafts and making things out of wood like this. I make staffs and rods for the shepherds. Shepherds come from all over Israel to buy my staffs that are strong and sturdy. And I make walking sticks as well and many, many other things. But I never knew the day would come when I needed a walking stick, when I needed a staff to lean on because of my weakness that came upon me because of this leprosy. But God has blessed us and God has prospered us. And we are so grateful for his hand upon our life. And we have a family, and our firstborn, wonderful boy, his name is Levi. He asks questions all day long. How many of you have children like that? They're never quiet for very long, always asking questions, but he's a wonderful, wonderful boy. And the day came when my wife again was expecting our second child. And the day was coming. We knew that it would be soon, within probably a couple of months. And we decided if this little child was a girl, we would name her Rotem. Say that word, Rotem. And you've just spoken the name of a beautiful flower in Israel. It blooms out in the arid deserts. And it takes that desert and it makes it lovely and beautiful. And we wanted her to have that name, Rotem. But if it was a boy, his name would be Yitzhak. Say Yitzhak. That's another way of saying Isaac. Does anyone know what Isaac means, the name Isaac? Laughter, yes. And we decided, well, every house needs a little Yitzhak. It needs a little laughter. And we hoped that he would be one of those boys that would always bring just joy to our heart, if it would be a boy. But we just didn't know. Well, it was getting very close to the time of his birth. And my wife, Esther, she asked me if I would take Levi, maybe to give her a little rest from his endless questions, and go into Jerusalem and pick up some things that she needed from the shooks, the shops there in Jerusalem. She needed, among other things, some fabric that she would make the baby blanket for the little baby that was soon to join us in our family. And so off we went, Levi and I, making our way out of the village of Bethany and down the Mount of Olives into the Kidron Valley and then up into Jerusalem. It's not a long journey, maybe 2.5 miles. But on the way, he was asking all kinds of questions. Things like, are we almost there, Daddy? Abba, how much longer until we're there? And questions that how could I answer these questions? He said, will it be a boy or a girl? How would I know? Am I Yahweh? I can't. And when will the baby be born? And all I could say was, well, we hope soon he'll join our family or she will join our family. Either way it was.
And I got a little tired of the questions, and I decided, as I told him, you know, those questions, some of them, my son, they're over my head. So I picked him up and I threw him up over my head, say, see if you can find the answers up there. And he come back down. And what did he say after once? Do it again, Abba, do it again. And I did it again and again and again as we walked down the hill. I got a little tired, and so I just spun him around and I put him on my back. And we continued to walk. And suddenly he was quiet. This boy was never quiet, but he was quiet. And he was kind of touching around on my back under my cloak. And he said, Abba, what happened to your back? And I said, well, why? He said, well, you have a sore. Does it hurt? I said, well, no, it doesn't, but I noticed it a few days ago, and I thought maybe I'd scraped my back or bumped it against something in the workshop, but it's nothing, I'm sure. Don't worry about it. But I could tell he was still worried. So we went on into Jerusalem. We picked up all the things we needed, and we made our way back up to Bethany and back to our home. And when I got there, I asked Esther, I said, my dear, would you take a look at this little thing that's on my back? Levi saw it today, and he seems a little worried. I don't know. I said, maybe I bumped something in the workshop. And she said, of course. And so I dropped my cloak so she could see it. And all she said was, oh, my, Moshe, that doesn't look like a bump or a scrape. That's an open sore. And you know you must have a priest look at that and examine that to make sure that it's not. And she started to say the word. I said, don't say that word in our home. Don't use that word in our home, please. But she kept after me day after day. Is it getting any better? Well, it wasn't getting any better. And she begged me, please go have the priest look at it. And so finally I told her, the next time I go to the city, I will do that for you, just to put it out of your mind. And so I went into the city about a week later, and I knew what I needed to do. I knew in order for this to be examined by a priest, I couldn't go into the temple where all the priests were. I had to send a messenger and have the priest come off of the holy mount and come and examine me outside the city. And so I sent the messenger, and out came a priest with an assistant, a witness. And we went behind a wall so they could examine this thing on my body and look at the rest of my body. It was kind of a humiliating thing, honestly. And this older priest said, oh, Moses, this doesn't look good. This doesn't look good. This could possibly be leprosy. And you know what you need to do. You need to go away right now for 1 week. And 1 week later, come back and we'll examine it again. And we'll have the final word then. I tell you, that was the longest week of my life up to that point. I went away and I went back to our home, and I told Esther what the priest had said. I said, this means I can't be in the house for the week. I'll stay out in the workshop and I'll work while this week passes by. Oh, I got a lot of work done that week, but I got a lot of worrying done too. And I waited and waited, and I counted the sunsets and I counted the sunrises. And on the seventh day, I went back. And my wife went with me. She had a family member look after Levi. And so we went to the same place, and we sent the same message in, and the same two priests came out. And they'd been talking about this throughout the week, about Moshe from Bethany. And they said, well, let us look at it again. And they told me, get down on your knees. And I got down on my knees. And they told me to drop my cloak around my shoulders. And I did, and they said, bend over so we can see. And I bent forward, and they circled me, almost like a lion circling its prey. And then I heard him say, oh, this is terrible. They said, Moshe, we're so sorry to tell you, but you are unclean. You are a leper. When he said those words, I'm sure I shook with the fear, the reality of what this was. In that moment, just hope drained from my heart. I wondered, what happens now? What will life be like now? I stood up, and the priest, he raised his voice,
so everyone there could hear it. And he said, Mose, you are unclean. He pronounced, this man is a leper. Everyone stand back. And they didn't need to be told to stand back when they heard the word leper. They departed. They ran as if running for their very life. And there I stood with this diagnosis and this evil word that was now my word. The word that I would speak over and over again everywhere I went for the rest of my life. I couldn't be around good people like you. I couldn't walk up the aisle like I walked today. I would have to pronounce that word everywhere I went as I approached any kind of a crowd or walking up and down the roads. I saw people coming towards me. I had to say to them, I'm unclean. I'm unclean. Leper here. My wife was standing there listening to all of this. I turned to look at her, and her face was in her hands, and tears were flowing. And our eyes met, and there were just no words. No words. She knew what this meant. I knew what this meant. I would never hold her again in my arms. I would never toss my child into the air over my head. My son would grow up without me being there as a father that he needed. And this next child, whether it was Rotem or Yitzhak, they would never even know me. What did we do now? From a distance, we spoke a few words before we were ordered to depart. And Esther said, come back to the house. I'll leave a parcel of food and some clothing and a blanket for you on the rock out by the field. And so she ran ahead of me. And I walked slower up that hill, up the Mount of Olives, than I had ever walked in all of my life. As I knew my life was over. It would be slow death from this point on. I'd seen lepers, what was left of them. You could see it in their flesh. You could see the fingers that were missing, and the earlobes that were gone, and the nose that had rotted away. And I knew that that would be my future. Unless God would just, in mercy, take my life. And so I made my way back to our home, towards our home. And there was the parcel that she said she would leave, and we spoke for a moment. I said, oh, my dear, I am so sorry. I have no idea how this could have happened to us. And then Levi came running out of the house towards me. When he saw me, he said, Abba, Abba. And Esther grabbed his arm as he was passing by her, said, no, Levi, you can't see your father now. I'll explain to you later. How would she explain to him? And that's what it was like for the next week and a half to 2 weeks. I was a father from a distance. I was a husband from a distance. And I wondered, well, where do I go now? I couldn't stay here. I couldn't put them through the agony of watching my life slowly end. And I decided, I just need to go. I just need to go. I'll go north and I'll go west and I'll go east, but I just have to go. I can't stay. This isn't fair to put them through this. And so the next day, I told that to Esther from a distance, and she wept, and I wept. And I told her, I will pray for you every day, and I will love you with all of my heart as long as I live. But in kindness to you and Levi and this next child, I must go. And I spoke a blessing over them. I spoke the song that my son loved more than any other song. He always asked that we could sing it or at least recite it when we would walk and when we would work. And I spoke it over my family. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in times of trouble. And though the earth be removed, we will not fear. I spoke it, but I don't know that I felt it in my heart. And then I told them goodbye, and I walked north for days and days and days. And then I walked west to the great sea. And then I walked east towards the Sea of Galilee and the Jordan River. And days just became weeks and weeks, months. And the months and the years passed, and it was over 20 years of my life I lived as that leper, wondering if there was ever going to be any kind of hope whatsoever. Have you ever lost a friend? Anybody here ever lost a friend? Let me see the hands of anyone who's ever lost a friend. Have you ever lost all your friends like that? and all your family gone, and everything that you cared about, your place in your community, just gone, and your livelihood, and your hope. Have you ever lost all of that? For a leper, that's the reality. It's all just over. Along with your reason to live, and you almost beg for the mercy of death to come your way. But I think the hardest thing of all those years was just the separation. You were an outcast. You were like a monster. You were feared and despised by people. There were some people that would pity us as they saw a leper pass by. They would maybe leave a little bit of food for us. Sometimes it was even cooked food as they saw us coming, or they took it off their own plates and they left it for us. Such kind people are so rare in this world. Some people would throw coins at us, which was much nicer than those who throw stones at us. But there were those that were generous and those that were kind. But there were no more friends. No, there were some lepers that decided to travel together and actually live together, if you could call it living. Almost like little families, if you could call those families. But I chose not to. I just couldn't sit at night around an open campfire and look across that campfire at what I was becoming. I didn't want to be reminded about how I looked. I avoided anything that was like a mirror or a reflection. I didn't want to see the reality, and neither would you. Something like this came in very handy when we walked through a crowd just to hide the hideous thing that I had become and asking God somehow for his mercy. But the separation was the worst. There was physical misery too, but the social separation, the mental anguish of the loneliness, it would be overwhelming at times. Never would I have just a long, lingering, friendly conversation with anyone. It was just life alone and life on the road. But the loneliness became the heaviest weight of all, I think, in those days. And that was, as I said, more than half of my life. But then one day, we began to hear stories. Stories about a preacher from Nazareth, who was making his way all over Galilee and down into Judea. We heard that he caused some trouble when he went into the temple one day and started turning over tables and calling the money changers, what they were, thieves, for how much they were charging people to have the proper currency to put into the offering boxes. I already liked this man when I heard that story. But we heard that he was on the move and that he wasn't only preaching about the love of God and the mercy of God. Can I tell you, all my years growing up in synagogue and going to the temple, I didn't hear much about the love of God and the mercy of God and the overwhelming grace of God. But they said that this man was saying things like, God so loved the world. Not just God is angry with the world, but God so loved the world that he had sent him into this world. And he spoke of grace. He spoke of the kindness of God. And yes, he spoke about the need to turn from our sins and get our hearts right with God if we get off the path. And don't we all get off the path sometimes? But we're drawn by the love of God. And it was wonderful to hear such things. And I decided I want to find this man and hear for myself. So whenever I heard the stories of these travelers as they came up and down the road, I'd stand at the proper distance, say, unclean, unclean, but I have a question. Where is this Yeshua? Where is this Jesus of Nazareth now? And they would say, well he's up the road in Migdal, or he's down there in Jericho, or he's way up there in Caesarea Philippi, or he's there in Chorazim and Bethsaida around the Sea of Galilee. And I'd go off in that distance or off in that direction to see if I could catch up with him and hear for myself. But then more stories came that he wasn't just preaching, he was healing people of all kinds of sicknesses and all kinds of diseases. It seemed like nothing could stand against his faith and his power, wherever this power came from. And they said he was opening blinded eyes. My vision was beginning to fade from this terrible disease. And he was healing all kinds of sicknesses. They said he even raised the dead. Who does that? Whoever this was, I needed to get next to him. I needed to see it for myself. And so I asked questions day after day, where is he? And it always seemed, as soon as I got to a place like Migdal, always been gone for 2 days. No, thank you very much. Which way did he go? Well, he went south. Then we'd hear he was in Jericho. You know how far Jericho is from Migdal? It's like 70 miles. And here's the pace if you're a leper in the later stages of the disease. Yeah, see you in a minute. I'll be right behind you. And it takes you days and days to get there. And always, as soon, whenever we got there, oh, he's been gone for 3 days, maybe a week. And then we were back up in Galilee. There's a couple of lepers in this little group just traveling north, and I walked with them for a while, but I never camped with them. And we heard the travelers coming south as we were getting close to the Sea of Galilee. They said, oh, wasn't it marvelous? Wasn't it marvelous? And he healed, and we heard them. And I said, you're speaking of Yeshua, aren't you? I said, where is he? He said, he's in Capernaum, and he's healing people there, and he's preaching there, but he won't have anything to do with you. You're a leper. You might as well not waste your time. He won't touch you. He would never touch someone like you. And off they went without casting a blessing upon us. And so I said to myself, I'm going to Capernaum. The other guys, they said, no, we're going south. Enough of this. And so I made my way north, several more miles to the outskirts of Capernaum, and people were still coming down the road speaking about Yeshua and what he had just done. And I spoke to them from a distance again. I said, pardon me, unclean here, but where? Where is he? They said, well, he's just, and they told me there along the coast where he was, just on the south of Capernaum. And as I got near to that spot, I could see a small band of people coming my way, and all of them listening to this one that was right in the middle of that pack of people, and he was teaching them and talking to them. And I called out to them from a distance, and I said, pardon me, I'm unclean, but I'm looking for Yeshua of Nazareth. Do you know where he is? And the one in the middle said, that's me. That's me. And I got down on my knees. I got as close as I dared get to him. And I found myself on my knees before him. And I said, I've heard of you. And I know that if you're willing, you can make me clean. I know you can do this. And the next thing he did, I didn't expect. He started walking towards me. No one had ever walked towards me when they knew what I was. For all of these years, he walked towards me, and his disciples seemed frightened, concerned. They reached out to grab him, said, Jesus, no. And he turned around and he calmed them down. He said, enough. And he turned and he walked towards me. And he got right before me. I said it again. I said, I know, Jesus, that if you're willing, you can take this leprosy away. You can cleanse me if you're willing. And he reached out his hands. He did something nobody that wasn't a leper had done to me for over 20 years. He touched me on purpose. He touched my shoulders so gently. But then he gripped my shoulders and he said, willing? Willing? Of course I'm willing. And as he held me, he said, be clean. Be clean. It's gone. My eyes were closed, but I could feel the warmth in my body. I could feel in my fingers. And as I rubbed them together, I suddenly realized there's too many fingers there. I had only 2 fingers left on this hand and half of a thumb. And I looked and 1, 2, 3, 4, they all were there. And the same on the other hand, and I could feel this tingling all through my body. And I began to look at the places where there were open sores and up my arms and feeling around behind my neck where all of this started, and it was gone. I couldn't believe it. It was gone. And I stood before him and I said, Yeshua, how did you do that? I said, thank you. I didn't know. I'd never heard a story of you healing a leper, but thank you. How did you do this? He didn't answer that question. But I'll tell you what he did. He embraced me. He didn't just touch me from a distance. He wrapped his arms around this old leper, and I was no longer a leper anymore. And then he said to me, as I thanked him and I thanked him, I said, todah rabah, thank you so very much. He said to me, now I have two things for you to do. Can you do two things for me? I said, of course. He said, number one, don't tell anybody I healed you. I said, really? How can I not tell everybody that you've healed me? He just said it again, don't tell anybody. And he was stern when he said it. Do not tell anybody. And then he said my name, Moshe. I hadn't told him my name. How did he know all this about me? But he said, don't tell anyone. But now go to Jerusalem and present yourself to the priest and bring the offerings that you need to bring for the cleansing of a leper. And I told him I would do that. And I thanked him again, and he embraced me again, and his disciples seemed to just be in a state of awe over what they had seen. Was I the first leper that he had ever cleansed? It seemed like that was possible. And then I told him, todah rabah, one more time. And I said, pardon me, but I've got to get to Jerusalem. And I made my way south. And what was all for someone in my condition as a leper, moving as slowly as I told you, it could take 2 to 3 weeks to get there. I made it there in 3.5 days. I was a man on a desperate mission to be back in society, to be back with my family if they were still in Bethany. I made my way south, and I have to tell you, I disobeyed that first commandment of Jesus. He said, don't tell anyone. I told everyone. How could I not tell everyone? As I was passing by, I said, oh, glory to God for Yeshua. Have you heard of him? He healed my leprosy. He said, you're what? I said, yes. And I kept running as I made my way south. But I did obey that second command. And when I got to Jerusalem on that fourth day, I knew where to go. Over to the south gate of the temple where the steps go up as the worshipers come. And I called for a priest. There were always priests around that region. And I asked them, I need someone to inspect me. I need a priest to look at me. And the priest said, well, why? I said, well, I was a leper. And he stepped back quickly. He said, leper, what are you doing here? You shouldn't be here. I said, you didn't hear me. I said, I was a leper, but I've been healed. And the priest said, how could that have happened? I said, his name is Yeshua. Maybe you've heard of him. And he said, oh, yeah, we've heard of this Yeshua. But okay, we'll inspect you. And so he got a witness to come with him. And we stepped behind the wall again. And I had to take off my garments. And they looked me over from head to toe and every place in between. And they said, if you really were a leper, as if I was lying about it. Why would someone lie about leprosy? He said, if you're telling the truth, this is remarkable. But you know the law. Go away for 7 days. And then come back with the offerings for your cleansing. You know what the offerings were? Two little birds had to die. Two lambs had to die because of the leprosy. Other things had to be thrown together and offered. It was a long ritual of offerings. They said, bring all of that back with you and we'll inspect you again. And if you are still clean, then glory to God. A miracle of God to you, and will bless you, and you'll be on your way. Well, I didn't go home. I didn't want to go back to Bethany until I knew for sure that I was clean. But I went down into the Hinnom Valley, and I just spent every day and every evening there away from people and giving God glory and praise. I knew what the outcome would be. I knew that I was clean. So I went back as the sunrise came up on the seventh day, I went right back to the same place. The same priest was there, and I could tell they'd been talking about this. A strange miracle, a healing of a leper. Who'd ever heard of such a thing? And I went to him and said, I'm ready. And so he stepped behind the wall. They looked me over. They said, this is marvelous. There's no one that can explain this, but you are not a leper. Sir, you are clean. And when he said that, oh, can you imagine that after more than 20 years to be told, you're back. You're back. You're back in the family. You're back in the city. And it was like a huge welcome home. And then I went about the rituals and the offerings that had to take place. And we offered them one after another until the very end. And the priest looked at me and he said, Child of Israel, son of Israel, Moses, Moshe, you are clean. And you're free to go. And I thanked them, Toda Rabba, over and over again. And I made my way out the west gate of that city. And I headed down across the Kidron Valley, and I ran up to the city of Bethany, up the Mount of Olives, faster than I had ever run in my entire life as a much older man now. But nothing was in my way. When I got to Bethany, I went to the north a little bit to where our house had been. And there was the lane that led out to our little house and my workshop. And I came up there slowly, wondering, is she still here? Is my Esther still here? Is my son and the second child around? I still didn't know if it was a boy or girl. And as I got close to the house, there she was. Her back was to me, but I knew it was my Esther. She was hanging out laundry on the line there. And I came as close as I dared come without startling her. And then I called her name. And I said, Esther, wife of Moshe. And she turned and looked at me. And she was startled. She saw me and she said, And who are you? I said, Esther, I'm your Moses. I'm Moshe. And she said, No. She said, my husband is a leper. He's been gone for over 20 years. I said, I know that. I know that, Esther. But I've been healed. She said, how is that possible? I said, it was Yeshua of Nazareth. He touched me, and I was healed like that. And she said, this is too wonderful to believe. Is it really you? I said, yes. It's really me. We have a son. His name is Levi. You were expecting another baby when I had to leave because of the leprosy. And I don't know if it's Rotem, and I don't know if it's Yitzhak. But we have those two children. And she looked at me, and she said, it's Yitzhak. It's Yitzhak. It's Isaac. She said, my dear, it's you. And she ran to me. And we fell into each other's arms and we embraced and we wept tears of joy and gladness and we thanked God. And we just turned in circles. It was like an old couple of old people dancing there. And then we heard voices behind me. They said, Mother, what's going on here? Who is this man? And I turned. And I'm sure that the one that spoke was Levi. And the other one must have been laughter because he made me laugh at that moment to see my boy after all these years. And Esther answered them, said, oh, she said, Levi, Yitzhak, come, this is your father. And Yitzhak answered. Isaac said, it's not my father. My father is a leper. That's all I know about him is he's a leper. And I turned to him and I said, Isaac, that's true. I was a leper, but Yeshua has healed me, and I'm clean. I'm as clean as you are, my son. Come. Come, let me hold you. But they hesitated, and then Levi said it. He said, if you are Moshe, my father, then what's my favorite psalm in the Bible? And I began to sing it to him. I said, God is our refuge and our strength, a very present help in times of trouble. And though the earth be shaken, we will not be moved. He said, you are my Father. And we ran together and we embraced one another and we shouted our praises to God for the wonderful thing that he had done. He had given me back my life that had been robbed from me all those years ago as leprosy took over. And I don't know if the story that I've conveyed to you is the way that it happened for that pitiful man. But I'll tell you, I think it's so important every time we open up this book and we read these stories, you need to sink into the story. You need to feel what they might have been feeling. You need to put yourself in that story somewhere and realize that it was people just like you and just like me that Jesus came for. People that were lost that are now found because they received his touch. And I got a feeling that there's some people here today who were just as lost as that leper was lost. And maybe it's brokenness. Maybe it's social leprosy. Maybe you feel like an outcast. But Jesus beckons you. Jesus calls you to himself, and he will be your refuge. I look at this story, and I see that incredible moment when Jesus reached out his hand and not just tapped that man, but held that man. Held him in his arms and threw his arms around him. And I see the amazing touch of Jesus. When others were running from the lepers, Jesus was running to the lepers to heal them with a touch. How many of you have noticed that when the doctor heals you, it sometimes hurts when the doctor heals you? The doctor says, now you're going to feel a little pinch here, or you're going to feel a little pressure here. This might hurt just a little bit. And my good friend Derek over here, he and his wife are both very gifted physical therapists. He's working on my Achilles heel on my left foot. And I was on the table the other day, and I think he had like a sledgehammer he was beating it with. No, he was just rubbing into it. And I haven't hurt that much in years, maybe in decades. But I walked out of there feeling better. When the doctor heals you, it hurts. When Jesus heals you, the hurt stops. It stops. If it's that kind of miraculous touch, when Dr. Jesus heals you, he heals you. In Mark 1, as we've been moving through it very slowly, it just moves so fast, doesn't it? Look at it again. And remember back in Luke's gospel, as you look at Mark, I'll read this to you from Luke's gospel. I would if I could read. I didn't bring my leper glasses with me. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me. Think about this in context with this leper. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me. And the next thing you're going to see is Jesus' mission statement. It's all he did for 3.5 years is what he describes here. I've come to preach the gospel to the poor. There wasn't anybody poorer than the typical leper in those days. I've come to preach the gospel to the poorest among you. He sent me to heal the brokenhearted. Every leper that was separated from his family, how many times were their hearts broken as they looked back at all that they had lost? To proclaim liberty to the captives, freedom from that disease. Like the bullet points of Jesus' mission statement all seem to converge in the life of this leper here. At the end of chapter 1, after we've seen Jesus preaching and recruiting disciples and healing, and even healing things like a fever that you can deal with an aspirin or a cold cloth on your head, then nothing too small for Jesus, nothing too big for Jesus. And then casting out demons and then cleansing this leper. And he says, I've come to do all of this, and all of it seems to converge in this leper. The recovery of sight to the blind. Then setting at liberty those who were oppressed and to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. And so in Mark's gospel there, where it says that this leper came and he throws himself on his knees before Jesus and he begs him. Oh, I see more tears in his eyes than I found in my eyes this morning as I was retelling that story. It gets me every time that I read it and think through it.
But to see this man coming and throwing himself on the ground before Jesus, and Jesus saying, "Oh, I am so willing to heal you, to make you clean." And I really do wonder why it doesn't say this in what Jesus had to say that moment, as he's starting to move towards the leper. And his disciples have to be, I think the proper word would be, aghast at what he's doing. Just floored. How could Jesus move towards a leper? And some of you have seen The Chosen. You see that one scene where they're reaching out to pull Jesus back, and one of them is taking out a sword to threaten the man. Don't you come any closer. And Jesus says, "That's enough, John." I just love that. "That's enough, John." How many times in his ministry did Jesus have to say that to the disciples who are about to mess up a miracle? And I'm so surprised that Jesus doesn't turn to his disciples at that point when he sees the leper coming close and say to them, "You're going to want to take notes on this, guys. You're going to want to remember this." Because in John chapter 21, I think it's 20, John 20, verse 21 or 22, Jesus says, "As the Father sent me, I send you." That means I send you to touch lepers. That means that I send you to preach the gospel. I send you to love the brokenhearted and to bring healing to the brokenhearted. I send you into those uncomfortable areas of ministry. But he was saying, "I send you." And I think about all that this man lost. Jesus said he had come to seek and to save those who were lost. And we know what the devil came to do. The devil came to just seek and destroy every life that he could. And he's destroyed some lives in here too. I hear stories. I hear too many stories of people who were just like me. It began to happen for me in my high school years. For many, it happens in their high school, college years, or even younger. They just start following this mirage of joy or happiness. And it's all wrapped up in drugs, and it's all wrapped up in rebellion, and it's all wrapped up in science fiction. And that life gets, by degrees, more and more and more and more destroyed. The devil has come to seek and to destroy, and Jesus said, "I've come to seek and to save." And think about all that was lost in this guy. He had lost his health. He'd lost his livelihood, his family, his friends, his place in society. He lost joy. He lost dignity. He lost purpose. And then Jesus says, "Oh, of course I'm willing. I'm going to make you clean and more than clean." How many of you have ever seen the movie The Elephant Man? You ever see that? Go watch it again. Magnificent movie, true story, about a guy with this hideous disease and deformity that he had to wear a bag over his head wherever he went, and people tormented him in the towns. He was in a freak show, a traveling freak show for a while, and someone showed mercy, a doctor showed mercy to him. And there's one point where people have invaded and they're just abusing him, and it's a hideous scene. He's in a corner and he says, "I am not a monster. I am a human being." And Jesus saw the dignity of the human being, and he went after the broken one. And that's what he sent us to do as well, to seek and to save the lost, to destroy the works of the destroyer who has the power of death. And Jesus cancels the power of death. Amen? He destroys the power of death. And I don't know what the destroyer may have destroyed in you or what's broken in you, but I know who can heal it. And Jesus sent me here to tell you that today, that he loves you, and he wants you to bring your brokenness to him and to cast it at his feet. And if you need prayer for something in your life after the service, either turn to the Christian that you walked in here with or one that's sitting around you and say, "Would you pray for me?" And if not, then there'll be a prayer team up here, and of course they would love to pray for you. Catch a pastor or one of the other leaders here and ask them to pray for you as well. But move close to Jesus. Jesus is here today to restore you, to refresh you, to renew you. And that unbelievable, amazing touch that we see Jesus reaching out towards that leper, that same touch, that same hand is reaching out to you. That touch said so much. By the way, he didn't have to touch him, did he? We've seen Jesus say, "Go home and the healing will be there. Get there before I could ever get there." Jesus could have just spoken the healing and kept his distance, but he needed to put his hands on that man so he could tell us there's no one who's untouchable for us.
Yes, there, you know, there's still 208,000 or some number, somewhere around that, 208,000 lepers in the world today. Some in California, some in the south of the U.S. Leper colonies out in Hawaii, of course. Hansen's disease, it's still wreaking havoc on people's bodies, but there's those other levels of leprosy too. The social outcasts, the ones that we would look at and say unclean or despised or untouchable. I'm not just talking about Democrats or Republicans. Can we get past that? And just love in Jesus' name, socially and religiously untouchable. And when will I, as one of Jesus' followers, start to touch people the way he did? Can I draw your attention to one last thing? And if the worship team would come back up, that would be great. It says in the, I can't remember, in my eye, I didn't bring my glasses, like I said. But the one verse when he's standing there before this leper, and Mark in the gospel, take this into account. It says, Jesus moved with duty, moved with guilt, moved with compassion. It was love that moved him. The reason I want to enunciate that, I've heard over 51 years as a follower of Jesus, pastors preach that Jesus did these miracles just to prove that he was the Messiah. Well, it did prove that he was the Messiah, but the Bible never says it quite like that. It says over and over, moved with love, moved with compassion. What you're seeing there is Jesus loving a leper, loving an untouchable. And what I pray that Orange County will see, and wherever you happen to be, wherever you're watching from today, hey, I know that place right there. I've been in that place in Israel. But wherever you are right now, you need to know this, that Jesus loves you more than you think he does. He loves you perfectly. He won't stop loving you. And so I beg you, I know it sounds very folksy, but I beg you, love him back. Just start loving him back. Thank him for his death on the cross for you. And throw the rest of your life into his hand. And let him cleanse whatever's broken, heal whatever's broken, restore whatever's broken in you. And go live a free life. Now here's what's interesting. You better start playing or I'll keep talking too long. But Jesus told the leper, what was the first commandment? Don't tell anyone. Who did he tell? Everyone. I recall Jesus saying to us, tell everyone. What do? We typically tell no one. We tell very few. So if Jesus had put it this way, as before he ascended into heaven, go into all the world and don't tell anyone. Maybe we would be telling everyone. So if you need to act in rebellion, then flip the commandment. But let's go tell everyone that Jesus is real. Somebody's going to be in your path today. Don't you pass by them without dropping into their heart the truth of God's love somehow. I told a guy on the beach, a fisherman that I've gotten to know down on the beach. His name is Henry. He's a Vietnamese man. He said something to him about, I can't remember what it was, but he says, oh, you know how old I am? I said, no. He said, I'm 76. I said, no way, you're not 76. You're like 46 maybe. But I told him, I know that Jesus brought me here today, Henry, to tell you that he loves you. He got a big smile on his face when I told him that. Why don't you try that today? Somehow cast the love of God on somebody. Let's stand together and let's bless the Lord. But Father in heaven, I thank you for the glory of the truth of the gospel. And I thank you how we see the gospel played out in the healing of this desperate, pitiful leper, that you found him, Lord. And thank you for touching him. Thank you for touching us, God. And I pray that hearts right now would open up, and individual prayers would be lifted to you. Oh, Jesus, save me, forgive me, cleanse my heart. The rest of my life is yours. So, Lord, receive those who come to you today and put their faith in you and you alone. Thank you for dying for our sins, Lord, and cleansing us of the darkness. In Jesus' name, amen. Communion is going to be served over there, and as soon as we're done singing this, you can go there for communion or come forward for prayer. And may the Lord bless you and keep you and use you as you take His love into this world. Let's sing.
This has been a presentation of Refuge Calvary Chapel Huntington Beach with Pastor Bill Welsh. For more information about our ministry, please visit refugefamily.com or call 714-891-9495.